on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to our Monday, January 12th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you over the next 55 minutes as we dissect what's going down in the markets in early January. But you know this. You are not new to this. Here at Invest Talk, we have one goal, and you come with us each and every day on this journey to become a better and more informed investor. Each and every program, we bring you educational material, action items, warnings, risks, news, and you contribute as well with your finance and investment questions. That being said, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But let's start by tackling this caller question now.
Hi, Luke and Justin. This is Jane from New York. I'm calling in to ask about Micron Technologies, ticker MU. It's been on a very, very strong uptrend and it's gained a lot in the last couple of months. I'm wondering, is it overbought? Is it overvalued right now? Is it time to take some profit or just keep letting it run? Thank you. I'll listen to your answer on the show. Thank you. Have a great day.
Micron Technologies, ticker MU, is a name that we've held on and off for clients over the years. It is a leading U.S. semiconductor company. So what they do is they design and manufacture memory and storage solutions, including DRAM and NAND flash. And so recently, it's been doing pretty well. Year to date, it's up 21.18%. Year to date. I mean, we're barely into this thing. Over the past 3 months, it's up 90.46, up 248% over the past 52 weeks. And the reason is, well, because of the demand for memory. Now, historically, these names tend to be very volatile. Why? Because semiconductors move on a pretty cyclical basis. But there has been, given the investment in AI from all of these hyperscalers, this idea that perhaps we are in this memory super cycle. And you've seen revenue grow tremendously from 2024 into 2025, from $25 billion to $37 billion, projected to be $72 billion by year end. And so their fiscal year ends in August. So they recently had earnings and they were stellar. They were fantastic. That's why they're up 21.18% year to date. And so you look at this and you say, okay, it's been crazy in terms of its run up. It's trading at 9.9 times price to forward looking earnings, which looks low compared to its average of 19.9. But a lot of that is from at a time where it was trading very low compared to its guidance, when it was trading at 533 times. So it's near its average. But what I'm trying to say here is this is a name that has certainly run up a lot. And it is priced in such a way that it expects guidance to continue to be phenomenal. And so, given this pricing, if it doesn't reach its expectations, you could see a big drawdown here. You are up, probably a considerable amount. Anytime that happens is a good time to start to take profit. Should you trim out of the position completely? No, momentum is phenomenal here. But lock in some of those gains, allocate elsewhere. That is Micron Technologies, Inc., ticker MU. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this story. Housing, the lock-in thaw. With mortgage rates stabilizing near 6%, there are early signs that the lock-in effect is breaking, potentially bringing much-needed inventory to the spring 2026 market. Also, we've got a couple other stories to talk about today, including one on the fight over data centers and how cities and localities are kind of fighting with these big companies because of the amount of energy they are using. So what does that mean for the industry? What does that mean for the energy industry? What does that mean for utilities? We'll also touch on a story about Venezuelan oil. Should the president's dream come about? And should the investment come about in Venezuela? What does that mean for U.S. refiners as well as Canadian producers? We also have some voicemail calls ready to play, including one on the Avantis Moderate Allocation ETF, which is AVMA, and one on Fiverr International, ticker FVRR, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel, and hopefully some live calls throughout the show. Now we're going into a break. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. When we come back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think is a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about CORE in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. It's a new year. 2026 is here, and so is Luke Guerrero. He's taking your finance and investment questions anytime. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a look at the market today. U.S. stocks higher overall. They've finished a bit off of their best levels. In spite of that, S&P 500 capped off another record close, up 16 basis points on the day, with the NASDAQ up 26, Russell 2000 up 44, and the Dow up 17. Tech was mostly higher, Tesla and Google the standouts amongst that Mag 7 group, while retail favorites Momentum also a bit better. At the same time, value and minimum volatility, those safe haven equity assets, those defensive assets, they underperformed a bit. Other outperformers included semi-caps, A&D, industrial, and precious metals. Underperformers on the day included banks, credit cards, payment names, managed care, airlines, and trucking. On the bond side, Treasury's a bit weaker. You did see the curve steepening with yields up about 1 to 2 basis points across the board. Dollar index was down 30 basis points. Gold finished up 2.2%, and silver was up 7.2% on the day. Interestingly enough, the market kind of shrugged off the president's latest threat to Fed independence, reversing that modest sell America trade that we saw from the open. Over the weekend, Jerome Powell had a strong statement that the Justice Department investigation is a pretext for pressure on rates, and you saw some pushback from some key members of the Senate who were GOP members, including some key members on the Senate Banking Committee. And so that overall offered some, I would say, stabilization with respect to that. At the same time, the president called for a one-year 10% cap on credit card interest rates. And you continue to have this ramp up in geopolitical tensions. You had the government of Iran killing protesters over the weekend, and President Trump making comments about the U.S. considering options against the regime. More news that the U.S. may soon hit Russia with sanctions, while the Secretary of State met with leaders from Denmark and Greenland this week, or rather will meet with leaders from Denmark and Greenland this week. Other areas of focus as we move deeper into January, bit of a rotation into pro-cyclical names, potentially more dovish headlines related to trade and tariffs. Remember, the Supreme Court is set to make a decision at some point, potentially as early as Wednesday. And you have the start to Q4 earnings season on Tuesday and expected earnings growth acceleration. In terms of data, no economic data on today's calendar. Did see a treasury auction of about $58 billion of three-year notes, stopped through by 10 basis points with really a solid bid to cover. If you read last week's newsletter, you'd have a deeper understanding of what all that meant. But what you did see is foreign demand below recent averages. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, initial claims in January Philly Fed Manufacturing and Empire State Manufacturing surveys will be out on Thursday. December industrial production and January NAHB housing market index will cap off the week on Friday. Looks like we got a live call. Jarek from Canada calling about SCCO. How can I help you?
Hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call. When I look at SCCO and every time it pays out a dividend, it does a stock split. The last one was 126 to 125. I'm just wondering what's going on there. Like, my understanding is when a company pays out a dividend, their share price will drop because that's just less money on their book. Are they doing this split just to like stabilize the share price, or what's happening there?
Well, let's take a look at SCCO just for context. It is Southern Copper, and Southern Copper is the largest copper miner. It's done really well over the past 52 weeks, up 92.78%, because that commodity specifically is in such high demand and will continue to have this secular demand with the shift to electric vehicles, with the build out of the electrical grid, with databases. Now, I'm not exactly sure what you are asking about, because you're saying that every time they pay out a dividend, they do a stock split. But what you would mean is a reverse stock split. Essentially, they have fewer shares after than they did before in an attempt to stabilize the price. I'm not really seeing anything regarding that. Companies don't typically do that. Essentially, what you'd expect when a dividend is paid out is that a company's price would fall roughly by the amount of cash that is leaving the company, because there is less equity in that company, right? There's less assets in that company because it's being paid out to shareholders. So I'm not really seeing any stock splits right now in order to maintain those prices. Something I definitely have to look a little bit deeper into, because again, companies don't generally do that. Sorry if I didn't answer your question fully. Thanks for the call, Jarek.
Thank you.
All righty. Let's take a look at the InvestTalk YouTube comment section question bank. This question coming in earlier about ticker STAG. It says, what are your thoughts on STAG? Looks like the dividend sales and free cash flow have increased significantly year over year. I'm also currently looking for quality dividend paying stocks to add to my portfolio. Well, STAG is STAG Industrial. It is a US-based industrial real estate investment trust. In terms of size, it's on the smaller side, about $7.1 billion market cap. Got a decent amount of debt, about $2.9 billion in debt. Over the past 52 weeks, it's done pretty well, up 17.38%, up 3.43% over the past, year to date. Now, what it does is, as the name implies, or rather as the sector implies, is it invests in industrial real estate. And demand for warehouse and logistics space has really helped with occupancy, with rental cash flows. That's one of the reasons that it has been so strong year over year in terms of free cash flow, in terms of its dividend, in terms of its revenue. And it's had pretty steady earnings over the past couple quarters as well. And that has allowed it to have this consistent dividend, right? You're seeing it anywhere between 3 and 5%. Over the past couple years, it was about 4%. Is what you've been seeing in terms of dividend payout. Now, REITs tend to do well when you have a defined path of rates, especially as rates are coming down. Why? Because REITs are primarily invested in for diversification, different asset class exposure, as well as dividend income. And so as rates for bonds become less advantageous compared to REITs, well, REIT investment tends to go up. You tend to have this price appreciation, this demand driven, these demand-driven flows. Now, there certainly is risk, right? The industrial space is particularly cyclical, but given the demand for database build out, given the demand for, or rather the amount of CapEx from all these companies, certainly there isn't as much of a worry there in the short to mid term. Overall, I like Stag US. I like the industrial REIT space. You really have to find these particular areas of REITs that can be the most beneficial. Thanks for watching. Going into break, my main focus point is coming up about the housing thaw with regards to being locked in. As always, we'll give more answers to your questions, so stay with me. This is Invest Talk.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the housing market, which, while we enter 2026, may be at a turning point. Not with a crash or with a boom, but with something more subtle, something more drawn out. What's coming has been described as a great housing reset, a slow normalization rather than a dramatic correction. The defining shift is that income growth is finally expected to outpace housing price growth for the first sustained period since the aftermath of the financial crisis. That alone marks a meaningful change in the affordability equation, even if it doesn't feel dramatic on the ground right away. Mortgage rates are likely to drift lower, averaging in the low 6% range, but they will remain far above pandemic-era levels. The Federal Reserve may cut rates as the labor market softens, but lingering inflation and the absence of a recession will limit how far long-term rates can fall. What that means is that in practical terms, well, mortgage rates may briefly dip below 6%, but buyers shouldn't expect a return to ultra-cheap financing. Home prices themselves, well, they're expected to rise only modestly, roughly 1% year over year as demand cools and sellers begin to pull back. This is a critical distinction. Prices aren't falling because homeowners, they're not forced sellers. Most owners today have strong credit, they have significant equity, and they're locked in low mortgage rates, and that gives them the flexibility to wait. That dynamic prevents a sharp price correction, but also keeps inventories really tight. Affordability improves, not because homes get cheap, but because wages slowly catch up while prices stagnate. Monthly payments, they should rise more slowly than incomes, easing pressures on the margins for some buyers. That improvement will be enough to bring some sideline buyers back, but not enough to solve the affordability crisis outright. Gen Z, younger families, they're still going to face these hard trade-offs, including delaying home ownership, living with roommates, or moving back in with parents. Those pressures are already reshaping housing formation, with more multi-generational living and fewer traditional nuclear families. High housing costs, well, they're also expected to continue to weigh on birth rates, reinforcing long-term demographic shifts. Home sales are forecast to rise modestly, about 3% year over year, driven by slightly better affordability and lower rates than we saw in spring 2025. Now, that's a recovery, but it's a cautious one, as job insecurity and fears of AI-driven displacement are limiting confidence. While buying remains challenging, renting may become a bit more competitive. Apartment supply is falling as construction has slowed, while demand rises from these would-be home buyers staying on the sidelines. So then what happens? Well, as a result, rents are expected to climb maybe 2 to 3%, roughly in line with inflation, with sharper increases in supply-constrained metros. These pressures are uniting policymakers across party lines, with housing affordability emerging as a top voter concern. Expect more YIMBY-style zoning, more yes in my backyard, support of ADUs, and expanded manufactured housing, especially in rural areas. These policies could help at the margins, but they won't deliver instant relief. Time, not policy alone, remains the biggest factor in restoring this imbalance. More homeowners will respond by refinancing, by remodeling, rather than moving. With significant equity built up, many will tap HELOCs or cash out refinances to adapt their current homes to changing family needs. Regionally, demand is expected to shift towards affordability and stability. Areas near New York City, parts of the Midwest, the Great Lakes, cities are likely to heat up, while pandemic-era boom towns are likely to cool. Climate risk will increasingly shape moves at the neighborhood level, pushing people within metros rather than across the country. Now, another thing that you're starting to see, and we've actually started to see it locally, well, not so locally, is one of the large demand, one of the large drivers of demand during the pandemic, short-term rentals, vacation properties. You could start to see supply there loosening. Here's one area where we've seen it near Los Angeles. Big Bear, ski town. Hasn't had great snow recently in the past two seasons. A lot of buying during the pandemic, not for main homes, but for vacation homes, for vacation rentals, Airbnbs. You're starting to see a huge amount of supply in that specific area flood the market. That may drive prices down, but again, we're talking about at the margins, not meaningful resets. The bottom line is that 2026 doesn't bring a housing collapse. It doesn't bring a sudden boom, but the beginning of a long, uneven reset where affordability improves slowly, choices remain constrained, and patience will still be required. On the next Invest Talk, we'll dig into this story. Emerging markets. Is it the 2026 value play? With U.S. stocks at record valuations, we'll take a look at the case for investing in emerging markets, typically referred to as EM, as the contrarian value play of 2026, driven by a potentially weaker dollar. That's tomorrow. For now, I'm Luke Guerrero. And as always, we are ready to take your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. If you got a burning question in your mind that you just cannot wait to have answered, pick up that phone, dial that number, 888-99-CHART. This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment. An Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started. I've got something you need to check out. Now there's ClickUp. If your day starts with 10, 15, 25, or even 40 open tabs and ends with decision fatigue, because instead of doing your work, you're managing how to manage it. Spreadsheets here, docs there, Slack convos everywhere. It was chaos. But now there's ClickUp. It brings together projects, docs, conversations, everything in one workspace. ClickUp doesn't just support your workflow, it upgrades it with automation, AI, and customization. It's already trusted by over 4 million teams worldwide, and it helps them finish projects 30% faster. Try ClickUp for free and get 15% off all AI add-ons just for signing up at clickup.com/invest. That's clickup.com/invest. Close your tabs and open ClickUp.
The calls are free, the unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Craig from the mountains outside Seattle. I got a question about AVMA, Avantis's Moderate Allocation Fund. Right now, my brokerage account is about 40% AVGE, 40% AVGV, and then 20% VT, so all global value tilted. VT is basically my more conservative piece, and I was thinking about switching maybe 10% out of each of the main holdings and 10% out of VT and putting it into AVMA for some bond exposure in this market. And wondered if you could give a little bit of insight on what you think of that fund, what you think of that strategy, and what you think the economy in the next year may do with that kind of a fund. And I'll wait to hear it on the show. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
AVMA is the Avantis Moderate Allocation ETF. If you've been listening, you know that Avantis was started by a couple of my former coworkers when I used to work at Dimensional Fund Advisors, and they have the same type of strategy, right? They are attacking the market while emphasizing on the equity side, profitability, relative price, size as a factor of exposure. On the bond side, they're looking at duration. They're looking at credit risk. They're looking at at credit premiums, at time premiums. Now, AVMA is a fund of funds. What's a fund of funds? Well, a fund of funds, I'm going to say funds a lot, is a fund that invests in other funds. And so you're looking at this and you're saying, okay, my management fee is 5 basis points. The reason why is because this management fee is not including the funds that you're paying on the underlying funds. In this case, all Avantis funds. Now, what it does is it gives you a moderate risk profile by having exposure to US equities, fixed income and short-term bonds, international equities, and a small allocation to its value and small cap strategy. It's been around since 2023, but it hasn't really attracted much investment, $55 million. Its largest holdings are its US equity core, or rather Avantis US equity, its core fixed income, and its US large cap value and short-term fixed income ETFs. Seems like you like Avantis. I think they're a great company. I think that their way of attacking the equity space has historically and empirically been a good way to do it for long-term growth. My problem is generally with fund of funds. You are getting an amalgamation of underlying funds that you yourself can get exposure to in a way that makes more sense for you and then paying a fee for it. Now, in this case, the fee is small, 5 basis points. Sometimes you're talking about hedge fund of funds where you're paying percentage points on top of underlying percentage points. That's certainly something you should stay away from generally. But, you know, I think that you can probably get a more targeted fixed income exposure while still maintaining your overlying allocation that you've decided for the equity space. Find a way that is more tailored and personal to you. So although it's certainly a fine fund, generally not a big fan of fund to funds. So for AVMA, I would have to pass. Thanks for the call. All righty, let's play two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin, Bill from Philadelphia here. Calling about Fiverr International, ticker symbol FVRR. It's a company I've been looking at for a little bit. I've actually used their platform to get services and help with digital marketing and design and stuff like that. I think it's pretty great business model. And I believe that they're profitable now. Just hit a 52-week low, and I'm looking to possibly pick up some shares. Wanted to get your thoughts if now would be a good time. Love what you guys do and looking forward to hearing your answer on the show. Thank you.
Fiverr International, ticker FVRR, is essentially a online marketplace where you're matching freelancers with buyers of digital services. So design, writing, video, marketing, app creation, all sorts of different lines of business. And it has really been, essentially during the pandemic, right? It benefited from this surge of gig workers, the gig economy. People trying to find ways to make ends meet when maybe what their traditional job was closed. You see this huge boost in price during the pandemic. Pre-pandemic, it was trading at $20 a share, about there. By the end of 2020, it was trading at $3.23. Now it's come down dramatically. It's currently trading at $18.24. So a lot of this was the expectation that some of the trends that were driving the market, the economy, during the pandemic would stay. And we've seen this with a lot of companies. That certainly was not the case. Now, they recently had revenue and profits that beat expectations. And so you've seen, you know, you saw a little bit of a pop here in the middle of 2025. But even with their recent positive performance in terms of their quarterly profit, there hasn't been much movement. There just has not been much movement. One of the reasons why is a lot of their revenue growth was front-loaded. Revenue has slowed dramatically here. And so, yes, it's at a 52-week low. But you shouldn't just buy something because it's at a 52-week low. There has been, you know, overall, not a lot of growth within this space. And so even though it looks cheap, I think the trends just aren't there. That's Fiverr International, ticker FVRR. I'm sure you know there's been a rapid build out of power hungry data centers. And that's straining parts of the US electrical grid, raising fears that demand could outpace supply during periods of extreme heat or extreme cold. And for people who live in those cities, in those areas, that is a dire, dire issue. Utilities and grid operators warned that the existing system was not designed for this surge, and that new power plants, new transmission lines, they don't come up overnight. They take years to construct. In order to bridge the gap, some power officials have proposed a controversial solution, allowing data centers to connect sooner if they agree to disconnect from the grid when electricity is scarce. That idea has triggered some pushback from, you guessed it, Google, from Amazon, from Microsoft, which argue that their facilities must run continuously in order to support critical services. And the stakes are enormous. There's been hundreds of billions, even trillions of dollars of AI and cloud infrastructure investment, and it's dependent on this reliable power access. And so tensions are, they're rising, and they're most visible with markets in the Midwest, markets in the Mid-Atlantic, where you're already seeing higher prices and rising blackout risks. Some companies have explored rules that would require data centers to bring their own power or have service interruption potential. But negotiations are, frankly, not going well. They've collapsed. They collapsed last fall after members failed to reach consensus. Industrial groups counter that cutting off data centers could force heavier reliance on diesel backup generators, raising environmental and regulatory concerns. Texas offers a preview of what may come. Lawmakers pass legislation allowing data centers to be curtailed during grid emergencies, amid forecasts that state power demand could nearly double by 2035. Other grid operators, including the Southwest Power Pool, are now offering conditional services that speeds up grid connections in exchange for accepting possible shutdowns during tight conditions. Some tech firms are experimenting with demand response programs, dialing back power use in exchange for payments and in exchange for preferential treatment in grid connection queues. Researchers say these compromises may be unavoidable because without flexibility from data centers, the grid simply cannot scale fast enough to support the AI boom without risking widespread outages. Let's get back into the InvestTalk voice bank for a question, or rather the InvestTalk YouTube comment section question bank for a question that came in earlier on ticker GO, which is grocery outlet. It says, what is your opinion on grocery outlet stock? Anecdotally, I have noticed a lot more traffic in my local GO store. Stock looks to be in a terrible downtrend in general. What would be the sign that the stock is reversing? Well, typically the sign that a stock is reversing is a stock is reversing. There tends to not be advance notice because there is a catalyst that would likely drive that, something that would lead investors to want to invest at a time where they have not in the past. Now, Grocery Outlet is a consumer staples grocery retailer. They operate a network of independently owned discount grocery stores across the U.S., offering quality name brand and fresh products, but at deep, deep discounts. Revenue growth has been solid, frankly, right? You've seen revenue growth about 11.3% on an annualized basis going back to 2020. But you know what has not been solid? Margins, 1.7%, down from 3.4% during the pandemic. Costs are rising, and they have not been able to manage them. This is worse in terms of return on equity compared to all of these peers here. Walmart at 24.9, Target at 25.1. Return on equity here, sitting at 3.3% in 2024. It just is not a profitable business, or not as profitable as some of its peers. And so in spite of this trend of you anecdotally seeing more people at a grocery outlet, in spite of consumers trying to spend less money as costs have become uncontrollable, you're seeing the stock do very poorly. Down 41.58% in the past 52 weeks. Year to date, it's down 4.55%. And so until they can improve those margins, until they can handle those costs without raising prices on already stretched consumers, I don't see much change here. And certainly the momentum backs that up. That is Grocery Outlet Holding Corp, ticker GO. Why don't we play a fresh listener question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan Forbes from New York. Thank you for all that you do. Definitely listen to the last question of me selling HPE and PayPal. What I would like to do now is not necessarily invest in AI directly, but hopefully invest in, I don't know, the shovels, the stick and shovels, whatever that term is. And I got two stocks that I was thinking about choosing at least one of them, or if you think it should be like a little bit of both, that would be great. The two stock tickers are FN Fabrinet. I think that's the eyes of the AI infrastructure, and TER Teradyne, robotics and chip testing. Just because I think, you know, robots are going to hopefully not take over the world, but it's soon going to look like that. Anyways, looking forward to your answer. Have a great day. Bye.
Let's take a look at FN and TR. FN is Fabrinet. It's a global contract manufacturer. So what they do is they specialize in advanced optical packaging and precision optical electromechanical manufacturing services. It is a mid to large cap industrial tech services company, and they serve data communications, they serve telecom, they serve automotive. So they have overall a pretty solid amount of diversification in what is a niche market. They've had a growth due to the growth in data center demand and networking infrastructure that has boosted demand for precision optical and electronic components. The other name is what was the ticker on the other one, Jorge? What was the name of the company? Because TR is coming up with, is it Tootsie? Okay, Tootsie Roll Industries, a candy and confectionery manufacturer known for brands like Tootsie Roll, like Tootsie Pop, Dots. It's had steady but slow growth. It is a mature, low growth business, consistent cash flows. There's a dividend. Revenue kind of can be all over the place. The reason being costs. Costs of chocolate, sugar, and because you have a bit of seasonal demand. So you're choosing between a highly volatile growth exposure in FN versus a lower growth, stable cash flow company in TR. If you're trying to play the picks and shovels of AI, certainly the name you would go with here is FN, but given that you are having a bit of high volatile exposure, bolstering your portfolio with consumer staples is a good idea as well. That is FN versus TR. Thanks for the call. All good things must come to an end. We don't have much time left in this show, but we do have a critical story given recent events that we'll be talking about when we come back from the break. That story is about whether or not the administration's desire to utilize Venezuelan oil, what will that do to U.S. companies? What will that do to Canadian producers? How will that reshape the oil market? Now it is a new year. And anytime a new year comes about, well, you should start to think about, what did I learn last year? What am I looking forward to this year? And even though it's mid-January and the holidays are over, I still think it is meaningful, if you have not already, to take a look at our holiday special. You don't have to watch all of it, but maybe focus on the part where we talk about what we learned. What we learned in 2025. What lessons we're going to take into 2026. If you're interested, head over to investtalk.com, where you can find a link to our YouTube channel, which is Invest Talk with two T's, over on our YouTube, and look for the holiday special. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here, and that goal is to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break. So if you cannot wait till tomorrow to get your question answered, pick up that phone, give me a call, dial 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hopefully, from most of the time, we make it seem pretty easy to do a live show. But the reality is, sometimes wires get crossed. And so, let's go out over that question that we had before the break once again, because it is not about Fabrinet versus Tootsie. It's about Fabrinet versus Teradyne. Now, we already went over Fabrinet, the optical manufacturing name. Teradyne, though, semiconductor test equipment and industrial automation. It is a bit larger, $23 to $28 billion. It's where it's ranged recently. Revenue looks pretty solid. Profit margins vary by segment, but overall, about 18 to 20% on most recent quarterly metrics. In terms of valuation multiple, certainly a higher multiple than Fabrinet is. It's had strong performance. It pays a small dividend where Fabrinet does not. But because of its revenue stream, it has a bit higher volatility because semiconductors are cyclical. Fabrinet's going to be leveraged by networking hardware demand, by telecom data demand. Teradyne, more driven by AI semiconductor investment and robotics. Overall, I think they're both solid companies. We have looked at both of these companies recently. Do you want to name it the larger and is more diversified? Do you want to touch on semiconductors as well as industrial automation? Well, then Teradyne's where you want to be. Do you want to be more manufacturing services focused? Steady margins, steady cash flow, stronger recent profitability. Then Fabrinet's where you want to be. Either way, I think the themes that you're attacking are certainly where you want to adjust your portfolio to. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off, I want to talk a little bit about what has been going on in Venezuela, because a potential end to U.S. sanctions could unleash roughly 1 million barrels per day of crude oil back into the global market. Where are you going to refine it? Well, U.S. Gulf Coast refiners are positioned to be the biggest immediate winners. Those refiners are uniquely suited to handle Venezuela's heavy crude. And before sanctions in 2019, they routinely processed close to 800,000 barrels a day. Now, analysts are saying Gulf Coast plants could absorb most of the returning supply by displacing other heavy grades and competing aggressively on price. Certain companies are already up and running and trying to get as much Venezuelan crude as they possibly could. Chevron is the only U.S. major still operating in Venezuela under special license from the U.S. government. So what would happen here? Well, cheaper feedstock would lower fuel production costs for U.S. refiners, potentially translating into modest relief at the pump for American consumers. The downside of freer Venezuelans flows would be felt most sharply in Canada, whose heavy crude has filled the gap since sanctions began. With Canada exporting about 90% of its record 2025 output to the U.S., renewed competition would essentially erode Canadian pricing power. As such, you're starting to see, or rather you started to see, a bit of a slide in some Canadian producers as markets are trying to price in this risk. Over the long term, sustained Venezuelan output could strengthen the strategic case for Canada to build new export pipelines to reach Asian markets more directly, diversifying their revenue stream. In China, independent teapot refiners would face higher costs if Venezuelan crude is instead redirected to the U.S., forcing them to seek alternatives. As you can tell, should this come about, there are some strategic shifts that will be underway. Refiners would likely pivot towards Canadian, Middle Eastern, or discounted Russian and Iranian barrels, rather that is Chinese refiners, reshuffling global crude flows, even if sanctions are only partially lifted. Well, that does it for another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can get at iTunes, you can get at Spotify. And while you're at it, be sure to check out our YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk with two T's. Please leave us a rate and review while you're over at iTunes. We do really appreciate that. As always, if today's show made you think about your own personal financial circumstances, because everybody's different. Everybody has different investment needs, tax needs, retirement needs. So is your specific mix really working for you? At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to your financial life. If that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. It is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.